This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
This month at postwrestlingcafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. Postwrestlingcafe.com. $6 gets you in the door.
Rewind to Dynamite from the post-wrestling site. AEW lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitay, where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Wait, how are we doing?
I'm doing okay. How's my voice holding up?
It's doing fine. Like you sound like you're a little you're battling through it, but it's okay. You're adding some gravitas to your voice.
Apologies, free feeders. Welcome everybody. But yeah, I came down with something like literally as I was watching Dynamite and Collision. So bear with us. I'll do my best.
Well, don't worry because you've got your security blanket here, so in case any of your public speaking is not up to par,
yes,
I've got you covered on today's show because the wellness policy dropped on Tuesday. This was a straight listen through for me, no breaks.
Oh, I would hope that you might find something out of this concern, like because this concerns your profession as much as it does mine, because we, of course, are in the same profession. But yes,
every month I learn like multiple things about all three of you.
Yeah, it is certainly the show where, like, you know, like this and Talk are probably the shows where I'm the most vulnerable on one of these broadcasts. And you know what, like it's fun. It's ultimately fun for me to talk. So yesterday we spoke about the art of, I guess, speaking in a public space, meaning, you know, whether it be a podcasting or just even in front of an audience. Neil spoke a bit about his experiences speaking at press conferences, asking Tony Khan questions in the times that he's got to do that. So a lot of great discussion just between the three of us, and some good, interesting conversation with some callers as well.
And the moral of the story is always have faith in John Pollock, because he might trick you into a career.
He might trick me into a 15 plus year livelihood. Mm-hmm.
Well, definitely check out that. Always a must listen, the wellness policy. Today, we put up Pollock and Thurston. That is up, going through a lot of different subjects, from Tony Khan's interview with Ariel Helwani, TKO's big weekend at Madison Square Garden, and a bunch of lawsuit updates. We went through the Observer Hall of Fame class and TNA's terrible week of PR, all covered on today's Pollock and Thurston. And on Thursday, we are going to be dropping Rewind Away as we are covering Transformers.
The movie.
Let's
clarify that. Yes, this is, and let's clarify, this is the 1986 animated movie, The Transformers, okay, which is essentially the season. I believe there's season one, season two, and then this is essentially like the gap between season two and season three. It's the big climactic, nostalgia-filled, film of many of your childhoods that might be listening to this in our target audience, and for many also the source of maybe your first heartbreaks while watching a film, as the entire toy line dies so Hasbro can sell new toys for you in the next year.
Yeah. Optimus Prime took his ball and went home.
The ball literally out of his heart.
That's
to
right.
To Ultra Magnus.
That's right. The Matrix was handed down.
I cannot wait for this. This is like one of the most anticipated reviews we've ever had, John, I can tell.
I'm dreading it.
Mostly because people are interested in hearing John Pollock's reaction to the Transformers.
Well, that's the part I'm dreading, because if you are looking forward to that, I feel I am not going to be able to deliver this. I have Wei told me not to read anything more about this movie, and I have kept that promise.
That's the reaction I think people want. Somebody completely who's not watched the second of Transformers other than this.
I've never had the feeling before, ever. No matter like what messed up movie I've ever watched, I've never finished a movie and thought to myself, like, I need to watch this again because I don't know what I just... like, I don't have enough after this 90 minutes to talk about this. I will somehow... I will follow. I will be following in the footsteps. Wei will be the security blanket for yours truly on
Thursday. I will do my best to guide things along, but it'll be Sean Levine, our executive producer, who chose this movie. That will be the super fan that'll be joining us for this one. So I look forward to talking to both of you.
All right. And a reminder that we will be live both Friday night after SmackDown and Saturday late after Full Gear. Full Gear, we will be live here on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. So hit subscribe or F off. On to Dynamite we go. The Aganis Arena in Boston. 3,016 tickets distributed according to WrestleTix. And what a night of wrestling we had in store. Bobby Lashley and Ricochet are kicking things off. The winner will be the number one entrant in the casino gauntlet for the prestigious national title. And Ricochet is out in a Philadelphia Eagles hoodie and tells the audience, "Fly, Eagles, fly." I think he was expecting a lot more New England support here in Boston. This crowd did not seem to care all that much that he was supporting the Eagles. It was like it kind of felt like okay.
Hard to argue with the Super Bowl champions, I suppose.
Well, yeah. He said, then he just railed on the state. He hates Massachusetts. The only good thing to come out of this state is my wife. And I'm surprised that Helwani didn't ask Tony Khan about this. And he brings up MVP misidentifying the international title when it was introduced, saying it's the national title. Maybe MVP's getting dementia. And I thought he had some like really good lines here. And if you were to tell me this promo, I'm like, you're going to kick off the show. You're going to insult Boston. You're going to make fun of MVP. I'm like, it's Ricochet. Like, this is going to kill. And this audience just did not seem all that moved by this. But I thought he had some good lines in here.
And honestly, like much of the crowd response throughout the evening kind of felt that way to me.
Tony Schiavone told us in the dreaded third hour in the closing minutes, this has been an amazing crowd tonight.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It did not, like there were some moments, but this was not a lively crowd for the bulk of this show. Wai at postwrestling.com. You can tell me, no man, it was super loud. It was the loudest I've ever been to a wrestling show. I was in section G4 and the guy was screaming next to me. It was so loud. You don't know, man. You just don't know.
You got to do it in a Boston accent.
It's too early to do a Boston accent. Yeah. Well, after promo time, Lashley just finally grabs Ricochet and tosses him onto GOA on the floor and then runs over Toa and Khan. Lashley then catches a spirit gun attempt and just spikes Ricochet down, spears him. Somehow this lasted 5:23. I thought this was even shorter than that. He just ran through Ricochet here. So Lashley will be first in.
Most of this segment was taken up by Ricochet's promo. And honestly, at this point, I'm not really that disappointed because I feel like Ricochet is maybe even more known now for like his character stuff than he is his wrestling. I think in the case of a Bobby Lashley, you don't need to prolong this to go 50-50. Like it should be a squash match and he greatly benefits from it. Ricochet, I don't think hurts, suffers from it much at all because he can always talk his way up.
I think there's a decent shot Ricochet is winning this belt on Saturday.
Yeah.
Gets sure. his comeuppance afterwards. Yeah.
It is possible. Yeah. The gimmick he was trying to work to, like doing this promo style, felt like he was like doing several like false stops, like false finishes where like he would trail off in his speech. You think he's done. He's about to hand off the microphone. And then I'll say, actually, like an old Matt Moore to add. I thought that was kind of funny. And you didn't necessarily see the result of it in front of this crowd, but I hope he kind of continues to develop this.
A great public speaker is what you're saying of Ricochet. Yes, who would have thought all those years ago?
He's found his voice. Mm.
Joe and Shibata are backstage. So Joe will forfeit his title match on Saturday if he interferes in tonight's match between Hangman and Shibata. Page is guilty of crimes and transgressions against the ops. Shibata will exact revenge for Hobbs, and then Joe collects in full this weekend. Yeah. This man, when this guy is done wrestling, he will have a lifetime of managerial work ahead of him.
If he wanted to, yeah, certainly. I mean, having Samoa Joe talk for you certainly beats having a cell phone reading some sort of voice translation app. So, yeah, it's a more serious turn for Shibata, obviously. He's lost his phone, and instead he's got Samoa Joe.
Looks like Joe's like holding his imaginary phone.
Could be, yes.
The Young Bucks are watching highlights of their match with FTR from Full Gear 5 years ago. And Renee asks if they're joining the Don Callis family. Callis cuts in, calls it gotcha journalism, and they will give the Rubes an answer after the Bucks team with Josh Alexander, which is next because they're taking on Scorpio Sky and Top Flight. And it is brought up that it was 5 years ago this week that Top Flight made their debut in AEW facing the Young Bucks in Jacksonville. So they triple team.
And I would argue that they have less credibility now than they did when they debuted.
Well, it's medium flight these days.
Yeah. Scorpio Sky has not been on Dynamite since July of 2022. This is his first Dynamite match in 3 years.
When he did that promo on Collision Saturday and he listed off like the thousands of days since he lost the TNT title, he's like, and not a day has gone by that I haven't thought about it. I'm like, I bet, because you've had nothing else to do.
Not a day has gone by since we thought about you, honestly. Like, it's, yeah, he's been just a non-presence, really, in AEW as a whole, but yeah, Dynamite too.
Well, they were not here to be the focus. They triple-teamed Matt Jackson, and then Josh Alexander starts arguing with Matt after tagging himself in. Dante hit this incredible nosedive off the shoulders of Darius to Josh Alexander, but then the save is made. Dante comes off the top, is nailed with super kicks. BTE trigger gets blocked, and then Martin comes back with a Tope Kun Hero, and the crowd gets up for that. TK Driver is hit onto Dante, but Josh is the one to apply the ankle lock and getting the glory at 10 minutes, 39 seconds, as Tony calls Josh Alexander a bully.
Yeah, that seems to be the new character Alexander is portraying, and I'm glad for any sort of character to be portrayed, especially coming off of the, you know, very unfortunate Kota Ibushi injury, but they're doing it right by, like, crediting it to Alexander, and in fact, like, using it to springboard a new, more aggressive, more, I would say, sadistic, you know, heel type of character for Alexander, so that was nice to see. Match was very good. You know, Top Flight, I think, are excellent jobbers. But, you know, it's the type of match where you're really just kind of watching for the action, because it was really kind of hard to get invested for any sort of, like, yeah, you know, reasons beyond that.
Yeah, Sky Flight has not exactly gotten off the ground, would be my assessment, these many months in. Callis enters the ring and wants to get the answer from the Bucks, says that now you're getting big matches again, you're getting money, you got your entrance back. Callis would not want what happened to Omega to happen to the Young Bucks. And that prompts Kenny to come out with a chair, and he fights off members of the Don Callis family, and the Bucks are restraining him. And as he has his back turned, Josh Alexander chop blocks him and applies the ankle lock. And the Bucks are not stopping it, but they're conflicted. And Callis calls for the BTE trigger to Omega when Jurassic Express come down with a snow shovel and a vacuum to chase off the Don Callis family. So we are going into this trios match on Saturday with the idea if the Bucks are really concerned about Omega or if they end up in the family.
Was it a snow shovel and a vacuum?
It was a snow shovel and a full-on vacuum that Luchasaurus was wielding. And Perry, wow. Perry had the shovel.
We'll maybe doing a bit of like landscaping and
these are definitely going to be weapons that are used on Saturday. Yes.
Interesting.
Maybe they were studying like China and Jeff Jarrett. The Good Housekeeping match that they had.
Oh, that classic. How could I forget? Of course.
Yeah. Well, that's
so we don't get a definitive answer from the Bucks about joining Callis. We might expect that on the pay-per-view.
You would think. I mean, it would have been anticlimactic to just ultimately give an answer here, especially if they chose Kenny and then they got to wrestle him on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Renee interviewed Harley and Willow before their semifinal match with the Sisters of Sin, and perhaps they didn't make Sky Blue bleed enough last week. Athena and Mercedes didn't take us seriously. Well, look what happened there. And they celebrated as the Babes of Wrath.
That's who they are. Very energetic, charismatic promo from the both of them.
Then they had a nice moment where Tony Schiavone reflected on the passing of Bob Caudle. You know, because Schiavone was like, he grew up like a fan, and Bob Caudle was like the voice of his like wrestling youth. And then he got to work with the guy once he made it to Jim Crockett Promotion. So he was, I'm sure very, very much affected by his passing. And then said, if there is any wrestling Hall of Fame, he should be on the first ballot in, which I didn't know if that was a subtlety to the fact he was on the ballot for the Observer Hall of Fame and did not get in this year.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder. I feel these words were pretty genuine, and I would assume he just didn't think that there was like a, you know, an actual.
Well, I'm just saying with the timing of it all, but
there are a couple wrestling halls of fame, right? Like even Cauliflower.
There's a handful.
Doesn't Cauliflower have like an announcer? Don't they?
It's no? They don't have one specifically for an announcer, but it's more, yeah, it's like awards based. Okay. It's they honor just everybody.
Don't go like tweeting Tony Schiavone trying to correct him. Okay. Like this is, I feel like a very heartfelt message. I don't think he needs
it. It was a very nice message. It was a very nice message. And then they announced the Continental Classic begins next Wednesday in Nashville. I feel we say this every year, but I don't understand why they don't try to milk this a bit more. Like we're not, when are we going to find out the participants? Is it going to be Wednesday? Is it going to be Tuesday on Twitter?
Well, last year they said, didn't they do like some sort of online special revealing the brackets? Like maybe you'll get that.
One year they did do like, yeah, the online reveal.
Right. Yeah, John, you will find out at the optimal time for engagement, John, okay? Which is maybe
was
Wednesday
John Cena
morning.
Not available to read off the names for this?
I don't know. To me, like, I think the answer is always Tony doesn't have it yet. Okay, let him get to Collision. Once he's done Collision, he gets to the Jaguars, Fulham, whatever other bullshit stuff he's got. Then he can focus on these brackets for Continental Classic. Okay.
I mean, how many people could possibly be injured after Full Gear?
Yeah, that's always his excuse. And maybe it's a valid one. Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress, for a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shelton Benjamin and Speedball. The winner gets to be number two in the Casino Gauntlet. They should have just done like 15 of these matches. So we had the whole rollout of potential participants in the match.
Well, how hard would you be fighting if you're trying to be ranked 15th in the Casino Gauntlet?
Well, you go as hard as you feel the reward is worth it. MVP was on commentary. He just destroyed this Mike Bailey and his grappling. I mean, if Mike Bailey goes back and watches this, I mean, the snow shovel may be Jack Perry's foreign object, but it was the weapon of choice for MVP on commentary here because they're calling. It's like, oh, he's going for the arm. He's like, terrible technique. Look at the fulcrum. He doesn't even have it close to applied. If this guy wanted to work with me, I could help him. Great strikes, terrible grappling.
I think it's a great heel gimmick. It's the type of gimmick I wish, like, you know, I mean, like Taz, what employee is a color commentator, but like, yeah, it works in this scenario, certainly.
MVP kept reiterating that you don't win matches in the air. You win it on the ground, and Shelton is one of the best ground-based wrestlers in the game. So Bayley got a bit of offense in. He DDT'd him on the floor, but Shelton beats the count, and Bayley connects with a shooting star press for a two count, and then Shelton Benjamin hits this super kick that you don't get the best angle of, but it sounded like a gun went off and the bullet went through Bayley's head is what it sounded like. And Shelton goes for the cover. It's 1-2 and there is no kick out. So everyone looks confused. MVP gets off commentary. He gets into the ring and then Shelton just continues with a German step up knee and then super kicks him a second time. And this time, that's the finish in 12 minutes and 7 seconds. A very messed up finish down the stretch here. People were worried if Bayley got rocked or if just the super kick was supposed to be the finish. I didn't know what was going on here.
My suspicion is that because the super kick sounded so good, could it be that like Speedball decided to just call an audible and say like that was it? The finish is not going to be better than that super kick. So I'm just going to lay down for this. You count the three. Paul Turner didn't, or maybe didn't get the memo in the short amount of time. I don't know, but
nobody had poker faces after this either. Oh. Everyone looked upset and annoyed.
Sucks, because the match was great. You know, this match was awesome. Like, despite what MVP said, I thought like Speedball's like ground stuff, submission stuff looked great. You know, and who would, of course, like it should be come to no surprise that man has great high flying, great striking. And of course, even a pretty good ground game as well. He was spectacular in this match. And Shelton, again, looked like a monster. It's just like you do such a great match and you get to the finish. It would have been perfect. But then due to factors beyond the two of their control, it's not there. So thankfully, like when they did do the restart, I mean, Shelton killed him with like that knee, the suplex, and then another super kick. So it just ended up making Shelton look that much more devastating. But, you know, a lone blemish, but I thought it was still a great match.
I don't even know if it was brought up, but like the whole thing of these matches is that Lashley and Shelton have to start the match together now.
They show the graphic here. So, yeah, that is the interesting predicament. So we'll see what they do.
Moxley and Claudio against Roderick Strong and Orange Cassidy. So we got an update on Darby, who we have not seen since Blood and Guts. He sustained second degree burns. And Brian asks, is he cleared? Because that's insane. Well, apparently so, because this match was made on Saturday. Second degree burns be damned.
Yeah.
Garcia gets involved, knocking Cassidy off the turnbuckle. So Moxley is beating on him. They're really emphasizing the losing streak of John Moxley and crediting it all back to All in Texas and the loss to Moxley. Strong gets in, hits a tiger driver and a stronghold onto Moxley. And this was interesting because as soon as he applied the stronghold, like you were getting the you tapped out chance, but it's like every submission on Moxley now, the fans buy as a potential finish because they lit up when this stronghold got applied and it was Garcia that got on the apron. So Strong released it and goes after him. We see a Strong stop a doomsday device, superplexes Moxley, and then Orange Cassidy is in with an orange punch to Garcia, one to Moxley, and then chases after Yuta and runs around the ring, gets caught with the pop-up European and into a bulldog choke as Moxley submits Orange Cassidy in 12 minutes and 20 seconds. And they did put over that it took four members of the Death Riders to take out Orange Cassidy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, So great match, excellent, hard hitting, fast paced, high quality action as you would expect from like talent like this, right? So I found the booking somewhat interesting because like I don't know if it was just me, but I certainly expected like this could have been the day where the Death Riders would have kicked John Moxley out of the group. I mean, how much of a bigger failure does a leader have to suffer than to cause, you know, the team to lose in Blood and Guts? We didn't get that. We instead got a rehab match of sorts for John Moxley, giving him the victory. And this snapped Mox's losing streak in like what? He's winless in five. So this kind of disrupted that. And by the end, you understand why, because they gave Kyle O'Reilly a lot more than just, you know, like give Moxley a little bit because he was about to suffer a lot more in this post-match angle.
Yeah, Kyle runs down and he gets the ankle lock on Moxley, who's tapping furiously. Yuta and Garcia are kicking away, but Riley is just like out of his mind. He just screams. He won't let go and issues a challenge to Moxley for a no holds barred match on Saturday, which has now been added to the pay-per-view.
I think they've done a great job building Kyle, and you know, it's the most serious.
Can you imagine stating this a month ago that Kyle O'Reilly will face Jon Moxley after WrestleDream? And here they are, and what they've done in just a couple of matches with Kyle O'Reilly.
Yeah. And when I say they, I mean, obviously we mean like the entire brain trust that's involved in creative here, but predominantly Jon Moxley. Like he's making Kyle O'Reilly. And I think, you know, Kyle, thankfully is shedding some of the comedic side of his conglomeration self in these sort of settings. He sounded very nice and intense in this segment. And I hope they're able to continue that throughout this, match on Saturday. Is this Saturday?
Yeah. Saturday.
You think O'Reilly beats him proper? Like, this has to be the finish, right?
I think you can, at this point, I think if Moxley wins, it certainly means a whole lot more that if you, like, you could certainly just continue with this with O'Reilly, but my sense would be this is Moxley's, like, win back.
Yeah, I wonder. Because, like, I think, put it this way.
Like, I think the reaction is going to be fantastic for this match, because I think so too. Everyone buys Kyle O'Reilly. In fact, they're probably thinking he will win this match. So that's going to be great for the dynamic of this match, that you can go either way.
This is the best built match on the card.
You could say that. Yeah. Like, I've really enjoyed what they have done here. And, you know, taking a character that has been so protected, and now, you know, you can do losing streaks and make it's like, how many losing streaks have actually worked in pro wrestling? It's very few.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one was creative. Like, it's, you know, it wasn't a losing streak per se, but like a non-win streak for Moxley. And they got there through, I would say, clever and surprising ways each time.
Brodito called FTR one of the best teams in history, but we are one of the best in AEW, and you have not been able to beat us, so you're not leaving with our titles. Omega and Jurassic Express, they are, you can't buy family or friendship, but the Don Callis family has tried, and no money will save them on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Not $1 million, $2 million, or $10 million. Will we get up to a $10 million match?
Maybe if we're all in.
Tony Storm, Mina Shirakawa, they had quite the choreographed entrance, the two of them crafted, and they took on Alex Windsor and Riho. The only thing I'll say about these two quarterfinal matches we got tonight is that ending to Blood and Guts was so incredible that they'd be out of their mind not to do this match in the semifinals. That I almost wish these two quarterfinals had been done before Blood and Guts to really ramp up, because these kind of just felt like just very clear, like, we have to get through these matches to get to the match we already shot the angle for last week.
And I certainly think it resulted in a really, like, lukewarm atmosphere for both of those matches, because nobody could buy, you know, the non-focused upon teams to actually win.
No, here, this is around, like, around the midway point of the show, and the crowd certainly did take a dive in my viewing of this, but they worked on Mina for a long time. The crowd was really into Toni Storm. Like, they're chanting for her as she was on the apron. And during the picture in picture for several of these matches, like, man, it was a lull in this arena. There's a cannonball by Windsor off the apron, and then Mina applies a figure four. It's reversed by Riho, but then Storm comes in, turning it back around, and Storm eventually comes in, hits a release German. They hit dual hip attacks and a Storm Zero as Tony pins Alex Windsor in 12 minutes and 53 seconds.
Yeah, very low heat for the match. I think they certainly struggled in that department, and I thought they would do a bit more to build on Storm and Windsor's relationship, because, I mean, Windsor was kind of Mina's surrogate for a few weeks there, you know, earlier this year. So I thought there might have been some good drama to explore in two people fighting over Toni Storm. But I guess with Blood and Guts to build to, they probably didn't have the foresight, nor like the time, nor the attention to dedicate to it. But as a result, this was a match that certainly suffered from interest.
And then it's announced that the final four women's teams in the tournament will take part in a four-way match on Saturday. The winners of the four-way match get to choose a stipulation for their semifinal match.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So one of the semifinal matches will have a stipulation.
Yes. Alicia Toot is with Kyle Fletcher, Don Callis, and Mark Briscoe. Fletcher will set the record for number of TNT title defenses if he beats Mark Briscoe Saturday. And Briscoe, you will thank us when you join the Don Callis family and thrive under a real family. Briscoe tells him not to talk about family. He talks about his actual family and his work family, the conglomeration. Failure is not an option. And he says that he won't be leaving his family or letting them down. And at the beginning of this, they agreed to no physicality, but he gets jumped by Okada and Hechicero, who did not enter that agreement. And Callis tells Briscoe he's going to make his kids orphans.
I hope not.
Okada got the last line in this. He is glad. He said, "I was glad to help because I knew Takeshita wouldn't." And he says, "Proto Kata." It's really trying to get that one over. Proto Kata.
It's funny when he does it because it's like, I mean, Okada's not really known for puns, I guess. Yeah, it's kind of funny.
He's no Shiloh Hill.
No, he's not. No. I love seeing Okada try to court Fletcher, like for no reason other than to spite Takeshita. Like I love this Okada. I do. I'm sorry.
He should have bragged about the advance for Wrestle Kingdom here.
Maybe that'll be afterwards. Yeah.
Takeshita couldn't sell out the Tokyo Dome.
He needed me.
He wouldn't have had 8,000 tickets this week. We go to PAC.
Well, listen about that. Like, I'm expecting Takeshita to lose, and I think there's a very good chance Okada wins. So coming off of the Wrestle Kingdom, he could gloat about the result.
Yes, it's possible. I think even the idea of like Okada like going on last, I think there's a lot that they can take from that. Pat cuts a promo. He apologizes to Darby because I promised to break your neck, but instead I sent you to the burn unit and no one has seen from you or heard from you since. So this Saturday, there will be no weapons, no fire, because when you are stripped of all your bells and whistles, you can't compete at the level of a legitimate athlete like me. I thought this promo was awesome. And even more so, I think a lot of people forget that when Darby just does like straight wrestling, he is like really awesome. And I kind of hope we get this kind of match. The story really doesn't call for it. The story should call for Darby to like bring a flamethrower to take out Pac. But I certainly won't complain if they just go out and wrestle this type of match either. I think this will be one of the better matches on the card on Saturday.
Well, the man is suffering from second degree burns. Okay. So even a grappling match is going to be a death match for him.
Yeah. Matt Burn. The worst degree of burns.
Ouch. Yeah. So, I mean, I hope he sells it like that. You know, like, think about it. Just even a back rake, you know, should be deadly for Darby Allin. So I'm looking forward to the match. Not to say it's like, so what do you say? Like, this won't be just a ground-based match. It'll be a straightforward match. You'll still get some sort of, like, you know, a lot of variation. It's not like it's just grappling, but you'll definitely get that at the beginning. So I'm looking forward to it. Pac cut this. This was like a pre-tape promo. It looked really cool.
So I guess might have been from the countdown.
Okay, possibly, yeah. But I wonder if like he's still going back and forth, and it means this week he might not be in the U.S.
Will he be in full gear? At full gear.
This is his full gear now, isn't it?
I guess so.
This tank top.
I mean, if he shows up on Saturday like this, then this is here to stay, isn't it?
Yeah. So he was in a tracksuit today, and then I guess this body is here to stay. Yeah.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Hello. Braden Harrington here from Up Next. You can catch us live every Tuesday here at Post Wrestling as we cover NXT. But if you search Poison Rana in your YouTube or podcast app or social media of choice, you can check out all the other wrestling content that we create, podcasts, and so much more. Visit PoisonRana.ca and keep it lit.
Hangman Page against Katsuyori Shibata with Samoa Joe on commentary. He is not allowed to attack. Shibata gets in offense, and Joe just laughs uproariously. He was so funny on commentary. Page is dealing with his ribs and neck taped up from the Falls Count Anywhere match last week. Hobbs is nowhere to be seen. He was hospitalized, we learn. So Hangman has taken out Hobbs. Now he's going after Shibata. My only gripe with this, his selling was great. And there's one, he's struggling to get him up for a deadeye at one point, but then he's got to do the kip up, the dreaded kip up.
Shawn Michaels, man. Come on.
Maybe he saw Sol Ruka do the one-legged kip up on Tuesday and was like, I can't. All I've got are broken ribs here. I got to do my kip up.
If you had the athleticism to do a kip up, wouldn't you want to do one in every match?
Do I have a broken rib? I'd be like, F this. These fans aren't worth it.
It just looks cool.
Me more than them. So he blocks a PK, sets up in the corner, and Shibata lines him up like for a Shattered Dreams and kicks him in the inside of the thigh. This got such a reaction from people. The announcers were just disgusted at this guy and just his heel tactics here, but he's explaining, I didn't hit him in the balls. So then the very next move, the ref's back is turned and he kicks him right in the balls.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to an arm bar, makes the rope, and then Page is put in the ankle lock and his boot comes off. And maybe this was a show that I guess with Eddie's passing, we got multiple Eddie subtle tributes on this show.
Telling you, the most overexposed wrestler of 2025, Eddie Guerrero.
He was all over this. Yes. It was Eddie Guerrero Day, by the way.
So yeah, maybe a day after.
Day after, yes, in El Paso. So the boot comes off. He clotheslines Shibata, puts the boot back on, hits the buckshot to win in 10:48, and then afterwards winds up and Rochambeaus this guy right in the testicles so badly that he is sent to a dick surgeon.
So the low blow, at least for us on Triller, came right in the transition between Dynamite and Collision. So it went dip to black before it faded back up. Did it for you?
Okay, yeah, because I missed it. And because it was only when he said dick surgeon that I was like I didn't even see this, but they showed the replay of it. So you saw the replay. Right. They did show a replay.
Literally, as he's winding up and about to make contact with the balls, we dipped to black. That was kind of funny.
So you missed the Collision.
I did. Every transition between Dynamite and Collision should take place with a kick to the balls.
I think that is the new, like, instead
it's
of
the
a
crossover.
Wipe. Yeah. So Paige tells Joe, he makes a poncho reference. I don't know how many people did that land with in Boston, but hey, it's what this man's going to be remembered for. The ROH title run, the poncho, and Great Balls of Fire with Brock Lesnar.
I thought Poncho got a pretty good reaction tonight. Like, they were reacting to something. We all remember this great visual. Samoa Joe, unfortunately, will
Samoa
be remembered.
Samoa Poncho.
He'll be remembered for the face tattoo from TNA, and he'll be remembered for the poncho.
Oh, man. So he says, Hobbs is in the hospital. Shibata needs a dick surgeon, and now it's only you. And remember what I did the last time I was in a cage with another man, and I'll do it if I have to. I swear to God. Hypodermic needle.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. We'll get a tease, maybe, at least.
I think we at least have to tease needle use.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they hear from one very powerful group, mothers.
Yes, we'll see.
Backstage to FTR and Big Stoke. FTR formed 11 years ago, and 9 years ago, they had a classic match. But they can't say DIY, and they won't say WWE, and they won't say NXT, but you just go online and find it out.
I guess we're all just supposed to know that. I'm sure a lot of people did. Yeah.
I guess. I didn't know really what this had to do with the promo.
I feel like weren't we there? Was that
Toronto. I think it was because it was, I guess it was 9 years ago this week that match took place. So whatever.
Okay. Cool.
I think most people's response was the same as Cash's. Cash refers to Ricky as Dick the Dragon and Abuela. They'll be safe. We're done with all our games. But your role as the feel-good
Dick
story...
Dick the Dragon and Abuela sounds like the coolest band name.
Dick the Dragon and Abuela.
Yeah, I don't even know what music they'd make.
That would... Imagine if that was what the White Stripes decided to go by instead.
They'd be my favorite band.
So... Dak says they've had classic after classic, but this title reign is what we hang our hat on. And then we will be the best team of all time. Three-time AEW tag champions. It's kind of like you just say something and then it must be. Like, I don't know what this title reign means above any of their other title reigns, but...
How many three-time tag team champions are there in AEW? Like, would this be significant for that reason?
Are the Bucks three-time champions? I feel they have to be at least three. Brian, get on this.
Yeah, do your job, Brian.
Come on, Brian. The hell?
Three reigns. Yeah. Bucks.
So they'd tie the Bucks?
I guess so, yeah.
Does that make them the greatest of all time? This kind of feels like you want to have a quick reign and then you win the fourth one. The fourth one we can get rally behind. That's what you saved this
for. Reason, I think FTR are going to win anyway, but then you ultimately build to a match with the Bucks for the fourth reign.
Let's do it. I mean, they did show the, the Bucks are randomly watching this old FTR match from 2020. I mean, certain that they can get back to that at some point. Mm. Megan Bain, Marina Shafir against Anna Jay and Ty Mello. It was funny. They emphasized the judo backgrounds of Shafir and Ty Mello, who just like struck one another. Like it was just
no.
Striking.
They did a lot of judo off the
did
top.
They
like they did a bunch of throws. Like it was like a sparring, like sort of a practice session. They did some throws, okay. But you wouldn't really know it because like the commentators didn't really focus on it too much.
Well, Jay hits a blockbuster to Megan Bain, tags in Mello. Mello hits both of them. They hit a pair of double DDTs, and then they go for guillotines, which Bain and Shafir turn into suplexes. Jay tries to get the Queen Slayer on Bain, but Shafir rakes the back, and at this point, she's the legal woman having tagged in with Bain, and just puts on Mother's Milk, and boom, instant tap. I do like the fact they're making the submission like you have. There's no fighting this. It's over. Nine minutes, 9 seconds, and now they will face Toni Storm and Mina Shirakawa.
I love Mother's Milk. I think it's such a badass submission, and I think it's such a great name for a submission. And like he's like kissing the forehead. She's kissing the forehead now of her victims, which, I mean, as a mother would, I suppose. But it's just, I think it's so awesome. So I love the finish. But I got to say, I was kind of like, so this match, again, suffered from the lack of heat. Like, just, again, we know what the semifinals are going to be. Nobody buys Ty J at all to win this. But I also think it was especially disappointing coming off of, like, the great presentations of Shafir predominantly, but also Shafir and Bain coming off of Blood and Guts. Crowd didn't really seem that interested in all of this. And I was also a little bit disappointed in that the match didn't carry more of an intense vibe that I thought Blood and Guts managed to create for the both of them.
I think we should have had that, like at minimum, like some interviews earlier in the show. Like these are important matches for this tournament, and let's hear from Anna Jay and Ty Mello. Like get these people in Boston to want to root for them and do something. Instead, they just. Like, you do that finish at Blood and Guts, and just everyone wants to see the semifinal match. And even without that angle, I think they'd be fighting that stigma that this is they're certainly. Not beating Megan Bain and Shafir. So, like, give Ty J like some kind of big rallying cry that gives you the audience wanting to back these two.
It's hard to do just with the positioning of Blood and Guts to this match, honestly. Like, and maybe to your point, John, maybe this match would have been better, like taking place before Blood and Guts. But, you know, it's not like you can really justify, you can justify a squash, of course, but I wouldn't do that to Ty J. I think they're a bigger team than a team that you just squash. But I still would have liked to have seen more intensity from Shafir and Bain in this match. Like, they were doing a spot where, like, they were doing, like, the 10 beats, like Sheamus's 10 beats with like Bane doing hers and then Shafir doing her kicks. And I thought that was just way too cute and way too contrived for somebody who I think should be the female equivalent of a John Moxley. You know, like Moxley does not do these sort of like 10 count type of like bullshit, like play to the crowd, like pattern things. He goes in there and kills. And that's what I loved about Shafir in the Blood and Guts that I didn't really get to see in this match.
Storm and Shirakawa are on screen. They are going to wear Bane and Shafir's skulls as a pearl necklace after Saturday. And then once they win the four-way, They can choose whatever stipulation they want. It can be a chicken coop match, apartment wrestling, or Mina suggests a Taipei death match. And that Moxley will piss himself with blood when he sees what these two do to their women. Very violent promo that they are painting.
Well, he's pissed out of many orifices. Has he pissed blood? I can only assume. Oh, sorry, blood out of many orifices. Well, I should edit that.
Well, the match is no holds, not no holes barred on Saturday. There was a video about Chris Statlander focusing. I could not focus on this. Austin Gunn and Juice Robinson, because of course, we need to hear from Austin Gunn and Juice Robinson on this show. They promote the tailgate brawl, the four-way, for $200,000. So only a fifth of the real big money that's going to be distributed on Saturday. I thought Juice was really funny here. Like, Austin's trying to cut, like, just your intense promo, and Juice is only concerned about the $200,000 because they're going to fill up their tax-deferred 401k. They're going to get a taxable brokerage account. And, Austin, we're going to get you a pension, and we're going to be pigs in shit. And I'm going to venture to guess that Austin Gunn had no idea. They just went in with some idea, and I feel Juice Robinson was just trying to get this guy to break, because that's what this promo felt like. It was fun, and I'm all for wrestlers thinking about pension plans, because God knows your promoters are not.
I think all wrestlers, absolutely all independent contractors, should be taking some sort of financial course or... maybe listening to Juice Robinson. Maybe this is a future gimmick for him, you know?
Yeah, he's after the juice. Kazuchika Okada and Masakura Dorada, double jeopardy match. At this point, Wei, like, I've hit my wall. Like, I'm good for wrestling for, like, the rest of the week at this point.
Yeah.
They know
I don't disagree, and I think a lot of that is because the crowd felt that Wei too, you know?
It's a weeknight. They gotta get back. They gotta, you know, parking ain't cheap in Boston. They note the fact that Okada's debut in August of 2004 on a Toriumon Mexico card was against Negro Navarro, and Danielson pipes in, "I was on that show." And I looked this up. Yeah, he, American Dragon. He was teaming with Ultimo Guerrero and Rey Bucanero on the same show. And you know, Okada was in the second match of the night. Do you know who was in the first match of the night?
This has to be interesting. So it was an Ultimo. I don't know, dude.
A young Santos Escobar.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Wow, fascinating.
Dorada, unfortunately, has this slip coming off the top turnbuckle where he's going for a DDT onto the edge of the apron, and he was not going to let this slip get in the way of completing this DDT. It was rough, and I think it shook him for, like, the next couple of minutes, because... they just had some timing that was off after this. And I think Dorada, it took him a couple of minutes to get his rhythm back. But eventually he misses a 450 splash, allowing Okada to climb to the top, and he hits his elbow drop. And Danielson points out, "That's how he broke my arm." And Callis just instantly, "That was tremendous."
Yeah, they're very funny.
Yeah. Okada hits his drop kick, goes for the Rainmaker, but Dorada turns into a sunset roll up and then hits the 450 for a two count. And then Dorada goes for a super Frankensteiner off the top turnbuckle, and Okada turns it into a power bomb. And I thought he murdered Dorada.
No, me too.
Holy Christ. This was the nastiest landing.
He ends up falling headfirst towards the floor from the top, landing on his shoulder, thankfully, but it was incredibly crazy. I wonder, like, what they're going for. Like, he must have been going for a top rope power bomb, but it looked awful.
It looked so rough. But then it really made this near fall, because Dorada almost instantly catches him with this small package, and man, did this crowd just explode for this near fall, because I think they thought they, like, watched this guy just perish in front of them, and then he gets this near fall. Brian... It's very obvious when Danielson is very concerned. Like, it just, like, you can just hear in his voice the concern, and he's just watching this near fall. All these people are cheering at the near fall, and Brian just yells, "I think he's hurt." And Okada hits a drop kick, lifts him up, hits a raging fire, and then hits the Rainmaker to win in 12 minutes and 10 seconds. I thought it was a really clever sequence for Okada to end, but I was so worried about this guy and I didn't know if he needed to be taking a fucking raging fire here on top of it. Hopefully he was fine after this, but he is, as we'll get to, is going to be wrestling on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, like, I was really looking forward to this match, and I think so much of it is all because it's like two world-class talents, and I think so, like, I also had the three-way in my mind, which to me is still one of the matches of the year between Okada, Dorada, and Takeshita. And if that was my comparison point, I mean, this was like many amount, not just below, unfortunately. It just, number one, it didn't have the atmosphere in the evening. By this point in the show, this crowd didn't necessarily have the energy to, I think, treat this like it was a big deal. And the match didn't really deliver, you know, like it unfortunately stood out for its sloppiness, especially in comparison to that prior match. And, you know, Dorada's moves are very ambitious. That's why he's so incredible. But when it's not pulled off well, I mean, it really does stand out. And at times it just looked either too cooperative or straight up mistimed and scary for all the wrong reasons. So lack of atmosphere plus a lot of that, I think overall made it a disappointing match for me.
So this was a double jeopardy match, and that means with Okada winning, that members of the Don Callis family get a shot at Dorada's CMLL World Trios titles, and Callis announces that they will challenge the Sky Team of Dorada, Mystico, and Neon this Saturday on the Tailgate Brawl against Okada, Hechicero, and Konosuke Takeshita, which is just a ridiculous amount of talent that you were putting on this pre-show. And the highlight of this was the camera was on Okada when Callis revealed, returning from Japan, Konosuke Takeshita. And dude, Okada is just so goddamn funny. It was
funny.
They just had the camera on him and just his slow reaction, because Callis is like, he's dragging it out before he reveals it. And Okada's realizing, oh, from Japan, I know who that means. It's just the bane of this guy's existence. But this match should be a lot of fun for Saturday's tailgate.
Yeah, I really don't care what people say, like who might be missing New Japan Okada. I love this Okada. Like, I think that he's got such an interesting, funny sense of humor that just gets to showcase itself in these little moments through this feud with Takeshita especially, and I wouldn't trade that for anything. So, yeah, this tailgate brawl, I mean, yeah, this card is, AEW cards are always stacked, so, yeah, we'll go through.
We'll read the updated lineup at the end here. This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at Season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com. Renee interviewed Julia Hart and Sky Blue. They did their promo style, just going back and forth, listing off the sins of the others. And then Tekla comes in, warning them of the twisted shit they are going to do at Full Gear in this four-way match. I think these two are winning this four-way, because I think that their match in the semifinals with Harley Cameron and Willow needs the stipulation, and it gives you the chance for the four of them to have another like bloodbath, because I don't think the other semifinal needs a stipulation, whereas they do. So I feel Julia Hart and Sky Blue win this one and then announce some crazy hardcore style match.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And then we arrive at the main event, Red Velvet and Mercedes Moné to unify the ROH Women's Television Championship. Chris Statlander is on commentary, and Moné holds up her belts in front of Statlander, and Velvet gets thrown into Statlander. Aubrey's back is turned, and Red Velvet hands over the belt to Mercedes and does the Eddie spot.
So I get the significance because Moné, Eddie, right?
Yeah. The crowd did not want to cheer this, though.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. It might be because of the week we've just had, but like, I feel like I'm done with like Eddie spots for quite a while. And, you know, coming off all the Dom stuff and just like This felt like
YouTube.com/postwrestling, though. That can be your lone Eddie intake of the week.
Thank you. Yes, of course. But like, I feel like they should have had the sense to recognize, like, we're a week removed from like the death date. Okay. Not to say like you need a specific time to like pay homage to Eddie Guerrero, but I just feel like it's an overdone thing. And I mean, I didn't really.
I want to see someone. Let's just expand the Eddie spots. Like, who's going to take the monkey flip and bounce off the ropes when taking the monkey flip? Like that.
Sure.
Let's do that. Like, let's expand. Okay, he did the belt spot. That's great. Yeah. He does the.
He did a lot more than just shuffle. laying down after throwing a chair to his opponent's hands. You know. Yeah.
So, I think this is during picture in picture that Statlander jokes about texting Danielson, and Brian could not make it more clear. I do not text. And Chris is just like, yeah, I was just making a joke. It was so awkward.
I found Statlander, like, I mean, okay, this was during commercial breaks where, like, they can be a bit more awkward because, like, they're not necessarily on. They're just kind of like, you know, like almost a bit more playful. But I overall felt Statlander, like, to be pretty unimpressive on commentary.
Unimpressive?
Unimpressive. Me. Did you feel different?
I mean, I found it to be weird the way she was setting this up. Is like, well, it's great. Mercedes is the one that's wrestling all these matches. I'm not. I'm just scouting her. And I mean, it's just such a weird dynamic. Plus, you're in Boston, so the crowd's like cheering Mercedes, and you had this total feel of like Statlander is like the heel that is capitalizing on the like the worker champion here that's going off and wrestling all over the world every week. So it was just kind of weird, and that's the story that Statlander painted. On commentary.
The problem is Monet's the bigger star, and you can understand why they want to feature Monet on a show like this.
You know, I don't think it was a negative at all. No, it was the right thing to do.
Also needs these like big showcases the way Paige is getting these big showcases every single week as champion.
The crowd starts chanting 14 belts, and then Monet gets the statement maker, kicks off the rope, it's broken. Velvet then gets an octopus applied, and that's turned into a lung blower. Mercedes tries for another one and it's countered, and then she finally hits one off of the turnbuckle, look really spectacular, and wins in 12 minutes and 26 seconds. We also failed to mention this was Red Velvet's first match back from her injury back in the summer that she sustained, and this is like a pretty high profile match to be thrown into in your first match back. And overall, like I thought that man, they really got this crowd by the end of what had been a really long show. They had seen a lot of wrestling, and I thought this was one of Red Velvet's better performances overall. But Mercedes gets the win and was, in fact, way holding up both belts of the. I think this interim belt's sticking around. That's my thought.
Oh, man. Still, though, she can't be considered what, like, 14?
Yeah, you can't be both. Like, you can't count as two separate ones, but, I mean, this feels more like Sid doing the undefeated streak in WCW.
So I'm with you. Like, I think this is a crazy scenario for somebody to come back from injury to, like, 5 months out, and your first match is against Mercedes Moné, arguably the most famous person you've ever wrestled in a one-on-one match, in her hometown, at the end of a three-hour Dynamite, you know, having to bring up a crowd that wasn't necessarily so hot in prior matches. So as a result, like, all that considered, I thought Velvet did a pretty good job here. I think she showed her improvement since the time she's been on Dynamite regularly during her time in ROH. And
she had that spectacular, like wheelbarrow flip out of the corner mm-hmm. that got a big near fall. Like, she certainly, like, I really thought this was a really strong performance from her. And
And unfortunately, this is like a match where she's going to be a background player to Statlander and Monet. But I do hope there's a role for her consistently on AEW proper.
So Monet stands on the desk and just tosses the belts at Statlander and then hits a Meteora and puts Statlander in the statement maker. And then as Mercedes is celebrating and we're going off the air, did you catch this? Statlander is carrying Red Velvet to the back. Mm-hmm. I don't know what was up with that. So
it might have been just a fun thing, or it could have been a tease of something further. I don't know, but I don't know if I looked that much into it. But
that was Dynamite, and that was Collision. It was a long show. That's what I'm going to say. I have positives to say about this show overall, but the 3 hours, this was one of those 3 hour shows. I certainly felt the third hour.
So last week was a 2.5 hour show, 2.5 hour plus, right? 2 hours 45 or something. And
that one, I had no problems.
Because that had the content to justify the duration. This did not. I mean, on paper, it was a good-looking show, but not that much better looking than a typical edition of AEW Dynamite. And it's a slog. Yeah, it got to be a slog. And I think a lot of that also had to do with the audience's energy, because I think it rubs off on the viewing experience. And a lot of these matches were just cold. And I don't entirely blame the audience, because some of them, they didn't really give you that much suspense, in particular the tag team tournament matches. What were some other highlights for you on the show?
I thought that the Kenny Omega return, I was like, they didn't really make it like a, by the end of the show, it didn't feel like this big return or anything like that. I would say that the high points of the show, I really liked the women's main event, because I thought that there was a lot going against them. And I thought overall they came through in that match. The Hangman Shibata stuff, that was pretty good. The promo afterwards setting up the Joe match. How would you feel Hangman and Joe has been built up for this rematch?
I think for a rematch, pretty good. And you know, mostly with Samoa Joe doing the heavy lifting, feeling like a refreshed and different version of himself. The fact that it's going to be a stipulation attached to it, like, heightens my interest. So despite the fact that Joe lost, I'm still more interested in the sequel. So I think, shall we go through the updated card for Full Gear?
Yeah, I'll go over the lineup here. So we have Hangman Page and Joe in the steel cage match for the AEW title. We assume that is closing the show this month.
You couldn't assume, and nothing's guaranteed.
Brodito against FTR for the tag titles in the match that will define FTR's legacy. Kenny Omega and Jurassic Express take on the Young Bucks and Josh Alexander for $1 million.
It's crazy.
Which is like 1.4 million Canadian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Josh Alexander has a lot at stake in this match.
Kenny too.
Kenny as well, yeah. Not making his residence here, though, is he? So
I don't know. No. It's probably worth just as much in Japan.
Chris Statlander, Mercedes Moné for the AEW Women's Championship. The Casino Gauntlet for the National Championship with Bobby Lashley first, Shelton Benjamin second. Kyle Fletcher, Mark Briscoe, no DQ for the TNT title. If Briscoe loses, he is forced to join the Don Callis family. Darby Allin against Pac, which is like the only match I'm looking at here that is just singles match. There's no title. There's no stipulation.
That is the appeal. It's a Darby Allin.
The stipulation is match. That there's no stipulation for a Darby Allin match. That's sure. The novelty of it.
Sure.
And then we have the four-way tag match with the Babes of Wrath, the Sisters of Sin, the Timeless Love Bombs, and Marina Shafir and Megan Bain, who do need a team name to fit into these four. John Moxley, Kyle O'Reilly, no holds barred match, and then the Tailgate Brawl has three matches as of right now. The Sky Team defending the Trios Championship is against Okada, Takeshita, and Hechicero. Caster and Bowens against the Bang Bang Gang, against Big Bill and Brian Keith, against the Outrunners for $200,000. Just sure. And then Boom and Doom. Big Boom AJ and QT Marshall with Big Justice in their corner against Rocky Romero and Trent Beretta.
Yeah. It's a good match to put on like TV, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Great pre-show match. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. We're gonna get Boom and Doom and the Sky Team bookending the Tailgate Brawl. Perfect.
Perfect, yeah. It's a pretty full card, wouldn't you say? Yeah, it's already Friday, Wednesday. This was the go-home show, so yeah, it has to be.
Yes. You think Moxley and O'Reilly was the best promoted match of this?
100%. I mean, I think the John Moxley-O'Reilly story has been the best one in the company following the last pay-per-view. And
I think they've done a really good job with that. I also think it's been simple but effective with Brodito and FTR. Like, I'm really looking forward to that match, and I think it's just been simple heat angles for FTR. They've done a pretty good job with Hangman and Joe. Like, I wouldn't say it's I do feel like this pay-per-view, I feel, is going to be under what All Out and Wrestle Dream would have done. My interest feels less for this one than those last two shows.
It's kind of how I feel too. Yeah. Maybe it's just a combination of just like, you know, the Paige Joe match being a rematch, albeit like, you know, a decently built 2-1. And just like maybe the lack of feeling of like,
We just had a pay-per-view, and really, like, the pay-per-view of this month kind of felt like blood and guts last week. Like, that felt like the big show to build towards, and I just feel like these four-week cycles, they don't always work for WWE or AEW, where sometimes it's the pay-per-view week, and you just don't feel like it's you're ready for another big show to for all these programs to reach that point.
What title changes can you see on this on the show? Monet and Statlander, do you see it?
Yeah, I think so.
You think Monet wins?
I think so.
Statlander's Rangers ends.
They could do that.
Feels kind of early, but I also wouldn't completely discount it.
I don't see Hangman losing. No. I see FTR winning the tag belts. Yes. That would probably be the strongest one over because Statlander I could see retaining. I don't see Brodito retaining. I'd be surprised by that one.
Fletcher, Briscoe, what do you think?
I think there's a you could do the happy ending with Mark Briscoe, but they rarely do the happy ending, especially if his family's there. If his family's there, he's definitely losing. And
how many times can Mark Briscoe lose though?
Yeah. Like, I mean he kind of should win this one, and Fletcher just goes into the Continental Classic and he's not holding on to this TNT belt. Like, he could win the Continental Classic.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it's time to move Kyle Fletcher on to like something even
bigger. Like, he is above this TNT title. If anything, this year has proven like totally. He has outgrown. He's really solidified this TNT, and he's only had it a few months. But I mean,
he's one away from being the winningest TNT champion. So yeah, I almost think it's
which is kind of good heat if he like ends up, you know, choking on the last one. I could see this one when Briscoe finally gets his big title.
I'm picking Briscoe too. Yeah,
and I think that's the only those are the only title matches on the cool. show. The CMLL Trios belts. I think Hechicero's there to lose.
Hechicero, yeah, I think so too. Although, wouldn't it be funny to see sure.
All right.
Okay.
That was Full Gear. Wei, I'm gonna read our one piece of feedback here.
Let's go
cut up the show. I want Wei to go get some rest and relaxation. So I'm gonna
apologies everybody. Hopefully this was listenable. No.
He's got to be ready for Transformers. So Brian from New Jersey writes, okay, so my assignment, as Shelton Mysterio in the chat found first, the Young Bucks held the tag titles three times before FTR could. I'll keep this short since Wei's under the weather. I enjoyed this latest massive go-home show, as shaggy as it was at times. Shaggy. My favorite match was Hangman and Shibata, which included a callback to Guerrero and Angle at WrestleMania 20. Hangman kicking Shibata in the dick was obscured by the collision tradition in the U.S. as well. Also, this may have been the case for longer, but I paid more attention this week, and during both NXT and Dynamite, there was not an ICE recruitment ad in sight. But fear not, folks. UFC made up for it this past weekend, as during the pay-per-view, they had an ICE recruitment ad. Shocking, I know. Okay. The night that AEW announced the national title, I saw the NWA national champion Mike Mondo respond to it with basically a wrestling promo tweet, and it was clean and professional. Since Mondo has his national title and is a New York native, what are the chances he's in the casino gauntlet on Saturday? That would actually be amazing if Mike Mondo got to come out. Man, him and Bobby Lashley, an OVW reunion, along with Shelton, could have all OVW alumni.
How old
in this.
Is Mike Mondo now?
Mike Wait, Mondo?
Who am I thinking about?
I don't think he's quite 50. Mid 40s.
42. Wow, okay. This guy from the Spirit Squad.
He was super young when he was in the Spirit Squad. So
amazing. Wow.
Yeah he's pretty he's pretty jacked up, isn't he?
He looks pretty big. I don't know if the chances are that great because I don't think he's that recognizable.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of a response Mike Mondo would get to be.
And what would the idea
honest.
Be to unify the national titles?
I'd only want Mike Mondo if it's so Bobby Lashley could spear him and just eliminate him very quickly. Right. It would be an olive branch type of maneuver.
Huge now, this guy. Wow.
Yeah, he's a big dude. All right, everybody. There you go. Keep weighing your thoughts. He will be back hopefully on Thursday to chat Transformers. And then we've got SmackDown Friday night and Full Gear Saturday. So we thank all of you for staying up with us, checking out Rewind to Dynamite. You can catch all of the news up at postwrestling.com. And again, we're dropping audio updates every single day for Double Double and Espresso members. Myself, Jack Wannon, we'll get Neil Flanagan in on the fun as well. And plenty to come on Post Wrestling. So we'll be chatting with you several more times this week. Good night. This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.